This episode is brought to you by DistroKid.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey everybody, today's guest is Dan Estrin, guitarist for the Agoura Hills, California rock band, Hoobastank. Dan and I break down the writing, recording, and release of their breakout smash hit, Crawling in the Dark, taken from their 2001 self-titled album. It was great catching up with Dan, as it had been some time since we last spoke. He filled me in on the band's drastic change in sound from their first independently released album to their self-titled major label debut. How producer Jim Wirt was an integral part in shaping the album's overall sound, and in particular, making Crawling in the Dark not only a standout track, but a perfect little three-minute rock radio staple. Dan shares how a lot of people initially mistook the tune as a religious song, which was surprising to hear, as I have never made that connection before. And we've heard this before on Krista Makes a Podcast, but it was cool to find out that Crawling in the Dark was written in the 11th hour, pretty much as the album sessions were wrapping up. For all this and a bunch more, don't touch that dial.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista Makes a Podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista Makes a Podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista Makes a Podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista Makes a Podcast.
Dan, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, I was thinking that probably 20 years ago now, I think you were touring behind the self-titled record when we played that crazy show with Green Day and No Doubt in Manchester, England at a cricket field.
Yeah.
I don't know where the times went.
It's insane, right? Like, we're celebrating the 20-year anniversary of our first album. And that had to have been 20 years ago. And we were just, before, you know, you hit record, we were briefly talking about it. And such a trip, man. You know, I mean, I still am nostalgic, and I still, even though we've been through whatever we've been through, I still feel like a fan of music and bands. And so at that time too, especially, you know, it was like, I was so green and new to everything. And like you said, we're out there in this big cricket field in England, and I'm in the VIP backstage area. And I was telling you, I heard all this jingle jangling from behind me, somebody walking through with a bunch of, like, what it turned out it was Gwen with jewelry walking through catering, heading to stage, but it just sounded like a bunch of, like, bags of coins hitting each other with all her flair and stuff. And I just remember turning around and seeing her in what she was wearing that day, and which was completely different than what my band would wear. We were just jeans and a t-shirt, you know, but
same with us.
Yeah. And like, but it was dope. I was like, there she is. Like, there, like, that's the legend is right there walking by. You know, I had seen No Doubt play at little clubs in LA. I saw them play at the Troubadour, actually, in Hollywood, which is like,
that's awesome,
300 people in like 1995, you know. Me and Doug, our lead singer, we went and saw that. So yeah, dude, it's just a trip now, 20 years later. Just,
yeah. And if you remember too, that was about a year and a half before American Idiot hit. So Green Day was supporting No Doubt. They were playing before them, you know, which is just amazing to even think of that whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, where they went a year and a half later to a well-known arena act to a stadium act. It was a pretty crazy.
It's crazy to me to have conversations with people that didn't know Green Day before Dookie, you know, and at that time, you know, I was still in high school. And at that time, it was like, at first the punk rocker kids were like, they're not supposed to be doing this. You know, I remember that at the time, like, yeah, this is on K-Rock. Like, what the fuck? But the songs were dope and they just exploded. But I remember it was this weird thing. They were this underground, loved by the underground only. And then they became mainstream. And I'm sure, as you know, when that happens, lots of bands get shit on as if it's their fault and whatever it is. And all they were doing was just continuing to write music like they had previously been doing when you loved it. But now it's on the radio and everyone that you don't like is listening to your favorite band. So now you can't like them anymore. It's just a weird fucking thing, dude.
Oh, it's a trip. We've talked about that a ton, referenced that a bunch of times on the show, the whole sellout thing in the 90s. It's just, it's so funny that you know, people, kids don't care anymore about any of that. They don't care what label you're on. They don't care if you're wearing a Gucci jacket in the video. They just don't, you don't hear that anymore, but it was such a thing back then. And speaking of where the time went, and don't take this the wrong way, but I can't believe that where the last 20 years have went. I mean, you guys to me still seem like a new band. you're anything but that, you know? It's so, I don't know where the times went.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I know what you're saying when you're going through it and you're an adult and you're having your own experiences like the two of us have had. And, you know, you're aware of pop culture or what's going on. You're watching it happen. And so it doesn't. Yeah, you're right. It does. 20 years seems like 5 years ago.
It truly does. And for the listeners, I want to give a little backstory here with Hoobastank. The band formed in 1994 in Agoura Hills, California. Their first full-length self-released album was in 1998 called They Sure Don't Make Basketball Shorts Like They Used To, which featured a saxophone section. It's kind of like funk-infused rock. And you know, Dan, when I go back to research these episodes, I was unaware that you guys made a record before the self-titled. And I went back and listened to this album, and albeit the sound was completely different, but the record holds up. It sounds pretty good.
Well, it's funny talking to you because like the horns, you know, it's the horns thing. And like, dude, we started as a band that it was me and Doug, really me and our singer. We just were pushing forward and the two of us loved the same bands, but we also loved other bands that the other one didn't love. And I was way down with Fishbone and the Skeletones and just whatever was going on out there, you know, but I was also into and Mr. Bungle. And at that time, if Mr. Bungle had they were on their second record by then, but it was just circus shit. It was like funky, heavy, ska, jazz, you know, and that album, what you're talking about is interesting because we had two saxophone players in the band at the time. And they were the best musicians by far in the band. They were brought in after us, you know, like me and Doug started the band in the mid 90s. And these sax guys were just bitching jazz players at high school that we were friends with. And we were just absorbing and soaking up every piece of music at that time, whether it was, you know, Seattle music or it was ska music or it was funk music or whatever. And we just kind of threw it all into our shit. And so, yeah, that album we made, it was demos, actually. It was just demos that we had made over the years, compiled into a CD, and then put that thing out. And it's funny to hear you say that. Yeah, I mean the tones all suck, and it's just it is what it is. But there's something captured there.
There is a cohesiveness there. It's not some crappy first album, but I was surprised. Like I said, stylistically, it couldn't be more far removed from where you went with the first record, which is amazing that you got signed and that was your sound, but you became what you did. It's really cool the evolution of the band. But yeah, it's hard. It was hard to evade ska and horns in Southern California in the mid to late 90s. It was everywhere.
Yeah, it was, and we didn't love straight up ska or reggae, or we loved everything. And kind of doing our whatever we were doing at the time with it, you know, was like I said, we had these sax players that were just amazing jazz players. So it came off in a, I don't know, dude, just as you listen to it, you'll make your, you know, people will make their own judgment of what it sounds like.
The horns sound great on it, and as I said a moment ago, there is a cohesive nature to the whole thing, but very surprising of where you guys ended up.
Well, and that's another thing too, though. It's like, so there are elements of songs on that record that have Hoobastank from 2004 in it, and it's when you get to the chorus, and it's when you if you take the horns out of the chorus, or you take the ba 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 whatever, you take all that shit out, you're hearing us for a second in there. Yeah, the verses go to this funky, clean, ska-ish, skanky thing or whatever. But we inevitably get to a chorus that's heavy as shit. And there's Doug singing his payoff. 100%, it does not sound like the first record. which came out 5 years later. But yeah, man, like our sax players, our guys, they were homies of ours from high school. They were out in college. We'd fly them in for certain things. Me, Doug, and the other guys were kind of writing everything anyways. It just, we were a local band. It wasn't working out that way with them. And as much as we love them still to this day, it's just, we had to move on.
Yeah, right on. Well, the band developed a strong following in Southern California, which led to Island Records signing them in 2000. And the band moved forward without the saxophones. Probably a good move. The band's self-titled major label debut came out in November of 2001. The first single from the album, which we'll be breaking down today, is Crawling in the Dark, which was a breakthrough hit. It reached number 68 on the Billboard Hot 100, number 3 on the Modern Rock chart, number 7 on the Mainstream Rock chart, and was number 1 on MP3.com download chart in early 2002. A second single from the album, Running Away, was even more successful, reaching number 44 on the Hot 100. The album went platinum based on the strength of these singles and the third single, Remember Me. The album was produced by Jim Wirt, whose resume includes Something Corporate, Alien Ant Farm, and Fiona Apple. The second album, The Reason, was released in December of 2003. It was produced by Howard Benson, which we have a lot of history with Howard, as you do.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much crap talking we want to talk on Howard. We love you, Howard. But we were talking the other day about his affection for his sweatpants and Oreo cookies.
The thing is that any shit talking we do about Howard, it's been done in front of Howard. So it's nothing that is behind his back. Granted, it's behind his back, but if he hears it, he knows. And yeah, dude, Howard is a trip. He's a, as you know, he's a great human being. And he's my neighbor. We live off, I'm one exit away from him. But yeah, man, like I went to his daughter's bat mitzvah. She's now married. So I went when she,
I know, it's crazy.
Yeah, dude. So it's like, you know, Harley and Grady, it's like they're, I've just known them, the whole family, since we were all young.
Yeah, it seems like yesterday I was playing video games with Grady in the studio. He was like 9 or 10 years old. And now I see him on Facebook with a mustache. I'm like, again, where did the time go?
Yeah. I was just over at Howard's house for a party. He had that judge and jury party, and hadn't seen, well, I see him, but I hadn't seen Monica and Harley and Grady in a minute. But it was cool, dude. Yeah, dude, we go way back with them, as you do. And you know, it's funny too, man. And you probably have to chop this out, because I the whole Bang Tango thing, right? Like, dude, like so he did that record, Howard, right? He did that first Bang Tango record. But I grew up in Calabasas, where Howard lives, is where I grew up from a year old till I live off the same exit still. And those dudes went to Calabasas High School, and they were much older than me, probably about 10, 15 years older than me. But I knew when that shit came out, it was like, mom, the guitar player of Bang Tango lives up the street from me. Like, next to my best friends, like the motherfucker still lives. He lives right there at home with his parents, and it's Mark Knight, who still lives right down the road from me.
And no, we're not going to chop this out of the episode. Which, less than Jake, I don't know if you know this.
No, I know.
But we tour with Bang Tango.
That's why I'm saying it, because I saw their movie, their documentary.
Oh, okay.
And then I saw you in there talking about, right? Isn't that you? And you're talking about, like,
yeah, that was me.
And
yeah,
you didn't. And it was funny because I was such a big fan of that band, that I didn't just know who Joe was. I knew who all the members were. And when I feel like when you walk,
how could you forget Kyle?
Dude, they were, I mean, when I was a little fucking kid, dude, like I remember walking in the mall, the Topanga Mall near my house here in Woodland Hills, as a little kid. And I saw Joe, the singer of Bang Tango, coming down the fucking escalator in Nordstrom. And on his arm was Bobby Brown, fucking Cherry Pie.
Wow.
And I remember just being like, and then fast forward, I saw her and Janie Lane. We used to see all those guys around her all the time. But yeah, dude, the Bang Tango story, the connection, I thought was sick, because I know that you were a fan of that album, right?
Heck yeah, I love Psycho Cafe. It was a great record. I mentioned a moment ago, I want the listeners to know that Bang Tango's bass player was named Kyle. It doesn't get much more rad than that.
Yeah. Yeah, dude.
I should have went by Chris. Maybe my career would have gotten a little bit better. I don't know.
Anyway, so I'm just sorry to get off track there, but I just know that when I saw you in there, I was like, oh, this dude's rad. He like, he fucking gets it, dude. Like, he likes other shit, you know? He likes the stuff I like.
Oh, dude, I was tripping out like probably 2 years ago. I was out in L.A. and I rode up an elevator in a parking garage with Bobby Blotzer from Rat. Oh, I was like, shit, having a moment. Yeah, I could hardly muster up the courage to say hello to him, which I ended up doing. But anyhow, the record with Howard Benson, The Reason, the song's title track, was a huge hit, reaching number two on the Billboard Hot 100. And the album reached number three on the Billboard 200 album chart. And you know, Dan, that was my first thought, was to cover The Reason on the show. But I just felt, which I think the song's great, huge hit for the band, but I felt there was a little more to talk about with Crawling in the Dark, a little more indicative of the band's overall sound. So that's what we went with. The band has released four albums since The Reason: Every Man for Himself in 2006, For and Ever in 2009, Fight of Flight in 2012, and Push Pull in 2018. Hoobastank just recently completed the Summerland tour, which also featured Everclear, Living Color, and Wheatus. What was it like seeing Vernon Reid jam every night?
It was amazing. I trolled Vernon on tour so hard every fucking night, dude. Like, I got to this point where it was like, I was just yelling, "Fuck yeah, Vernon!" And he'd look back and I'd have like my shirt up and my nipple out or something like that. And I'd be like, "Hoo-hoo!" And he would just always be like, "Oh, what the?" He could tell he loved it, but hated it. It was rad, you know? I mean, as a guitar player growing up and remembering when, you know, Cult of Personality came out.
Oh, yeah. The cult of personality. I know your anger, I know your dreams. I've been everything you wanna be. Oh, I'm the cult of personality.
It was pretty amazing, dude. It was like, there they are, there's the four dudes. I got to watch them every night, got to hang with them. We shared some crew members. So our two, like on days off, our camps, our buses would just always be together. So if we were at whatever hotel we were at, there's Living Color. Everything was booked together. So we were with them quite a bit and got to know them pretty well, celebrated birthdays. And it was rad, man.
That's so cool. You know, and they seem like kind of the odd band out. They were like, you know, the tail end of the 80s, early 90s. You guys, Wheatus, Everclear, and Hoobastank were a little bit later. But I talked to Brendan from Wheatus. I had him on the show recently, and he told me that the tour just went off without a hitch. It was so awesome. So I'm really glad to hear that.
It was so cool. I'm not going to lie. It's probably, had we not all been locked up for a year or whatever it was, maybe things would have been different, but I don't know. It was the vibe, the camaraderie between all the bands, the crews. It was just dope. It was a lot of fun. Yeah, dude, it's Living Color, man. Those guys were busting our balls like every night. Like, you guys got to come up on stage and jam this Rolling Stones, you know, song Bitch with us. And we're like, fuck, okay, I don't know. But we finally did it. And it was so much fun. We were just nervous, you know, but we did it. And to be up there playing with these guys that, like, I'm watching on MTV as a kid, and watching, you know, Corey Glover in his fucking body gloves wetsuit as he's singing.
Yeah.
And then watching Vernon Reid in his motorcycle. Cause as a kid, he's wearing in the video AXO motocross gear is what he's wearing. And as a kid, I rode motocross. So as a little kid, I'm watching this going, that's uncomfortable as shit. I know, cause I wear that stuff on a dirt bike. What the fuck is he doing wearing that on stage? 20 years later, 30 years later, I'm on tour with him. And I finally asked him, like, straight up, me and him just hanging there like, how the hell did you come across AXO motocross gear for your fucking video and your shit? And like, he told me, he said he was in a thrift store. They were traveling or something like that. He was in a thrift store and he saw it there. And he was looking at that point for something for wardrobe, or as you may know, when you're in a band trying to stand out or whatever it is. I've done stupid shit with hair, you know, and like, fuck, you know,
guilty.
Right. You look back and you see, and I think that it was one of those things that it was like, oh, okay. And so he just, yeah, it was very interesting to be able to have an adult conversation with somebody that from something 30 years ago that I was like blown away by, you know, but talk just as friends. It was cool.
That is so awesome. Well, we're going to jump into Crawling in the Dark now. The song is 2 minutes and 55 seconds. And the first note, Dan, that I have on this track is there is no fat on this tune anywhere.
There's no fat.
Yeah, there's no fat. There's not one part that I went, you know, that might have been able to be chopped there. Or why is that there? It's just every part needs to be there. And it's like the perfect pop song, man.
Well, I think that's because we went under 3 minutes. Had we gone 3 minutes, you would have found some fat. You know what I'm saying? Like,
it's, I don't know if I've ever said that on the show. I've been doing the show for over a year and a half now. And yeah, there's no fat to be trimmed in this thing. The intro goes for 8 seconds. There's this cool, clean guitar intro. Like a phaser pedal, maybe some delay on that.
You know, it does sound like that, and I don't think it's a phaser. Actually, I really remember working with an MXR flanger. Believe it or not,
I had flanger written down and scratched out.
Well, but the thing is that, so I've been trying to model a pedal to get that sound, and I cannot get it with a flanger. I never have. I've only been able to get it with a phaser. And everybody that hears it, my guitar techs, everybody, because I have them help me with it, they're like, no, it sounds like a phaser. So I mocked up a phaser sound for it. I feel like I remember a lot of that record because it was our first, and I just wasn't jaded yet, you know? Like, I just, things were just fresh and new. And I remember it being like an old vintage-y MXR phaser that Jim Wirt, the producer, had, and just kind of dialing it in with a little bit of delay. But fuck, man, I don't know. I mean, it was 20 years ago, dude. Like, I really don't.
I'm surprised you remember that much.
Well, I also have a lot of video. I have a lot of home video of us in there. Like, a buddy of mine was filming a lot with my video camera. And so there's footage of stuff. There's not footage of me like dialing in the pedal, but there's footage of me playing and recording that riff, like the intro riff to the song, and having a conversation about it.
That's really cool. At 9 seconds, there is 4 tom hits on the drums and bass guitar, followed by this is exactly how I wrote it here, Dan, followed by a crack a crack a bum on the drums. And then the whole band is in with this big stereo guitars are playing the rhythm and the chords of the first 2 lines of the chorus.
Sacrifice my every thing for just a second's worth of how my story's ending. And I wish I could know if the directions that I take and all the choices that I make won't end up all for nothing.
I will dedicate and sacrifice my everything for just a second's worth of how my story's ending. And I wish I could know if the directions that I take and all the choices that I make won't end up all for nothing. What's happening there?
Well, I can only speak so much about the lyrics because I didn't write them. It's, you know, that's Doug. But what's funny is that Doug is far from a religious person as you could possibly meet. But so many people thought that was like a Christian or religious song. And we got a lot of that in the beginning. Like, are you guys a Christian band? And nothing against that. If you are, you're not, whatever. We love, like I said earlier, I love Christian music. I love Indian music, whatever. I love everything. But it wasn't. And it's, I don't know, Doug. It's funny because I never really sat with him and been like, what is this? What is this? Because a lot of the times his lyric writing were thoughts that were just possibly random thoughts, or at times driving in a van from the airport to the hotel.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Do you ever remember Doug having like journals that he kept, or do you remember him like frantically writing a second verse in the studio to this, or was the song demoed and kind of done when you took it in? Do you recall?
Yeah, this song was the last song written for the record that was our first record. And it's so interesting because we signed a record deal without this song ever existing. And without running away, we didn't get the record deal with the 2 songs that ended up being the biggest songs for us on the record.
That's crazy.
So weird,
right?
That's
crazy.
The three songs, or the five. Yeah, there's a song called Hello Again, Ready For You, Up and Gone, Let You Know, and Pieces. Those are the 5 songs that we had that got us the record deal.
Hey, don't run away. There's lots more with Dan Estrin after a few words from our sponsors.
Looking to elevate your music career? DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that enables musicians to distribute their music to online stores and streaming platforms such as Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Tidal, and many more. DistroKid collects earnings and payments, sending them to you, the artist. With DistroKid, artists unlock a world of possibilities. From easily paying collaborators with splits, to securing your music with DistroLock, DistroKid covers all bases. Plus, you can promote your releases with HyperFollow and create eye-catching visuals with a Spotify Canvas generator, all for free. But that's not all. Introducing the DistroKid app, now available on iOS and Android. Artists can manage their releases, view streaming stats, and withdraw earnings, all from the palm of their hand. And for those looking to perfect their sound, check out Mixia. With its simple interface and customizable mastering options, artists can make their music sound polished and professional within minutes. And don't forget about Instant Share, DistroKid's newest feature. Share large files securely with collaborators, producers, and more, ensuring your music streams at the highest quality. Ready to take your music to the next level? Download the DistroKid app and explore their suite of tools today. Plus, listeners can enjoy 30% off their first year by visiting distrokid.com/VIP/demakes. That's distrokid.com/VIP/demakes.
And now, back to the show.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. It's like, you know, as a musician, you come up with these ideas, you'll pick up your guitar and you'll have an idea. And back then, like I would grab my phone now and record a riff on my memos, my voice memos. Back then I'd actually call my house and wait till
poor man's voice memo.
Yeah, wait till the answer machine went and like and then I'd play the riff or whatever. And I did have that riff. I had the I just had that, you know, a little bit of it that I'd recorded onto my answering machine. So we signed the record deal. We are in pre-production, like Running Away had been written at this point, but Crawling in the Dark was still not a song. We were one day away from going into that and recording the record. So as you know, pre-production is 2 weeks or whatever it was before starting the album. And I don't know, just maybe for your listeners, or whatever, but so we were in there for 2 weeks in a studio with the producer chopping songs up. This part's unnecessary. Maybe this, you know, we don't need this. We don't, whatever it is. We're starting, you know, we got to go into the real studio now and begin drums at the Village in Santa Monica on this date. And this date was like 2 days later. I happened to go into the studio that night by myself. I had the keys to the studio and I went in to go dial in my amp a little bit. And when I went there, I started kind of playing the riff a little bit more. And I think I either had my four track or I had like a little digital recorder of some sort, a Roland or something like that. And I just started demoing it. And like I did everything, I started, like I would do all of our songs with my Alesis SR16 or some shit.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's funny because Brendan from Weedus, I saw his Vice episode the other day and he's doing something on it. I'm like, dude, that's the same thing I did The Reason and Crawling in the Dark and all these songs on. But I started demoing it with everything. I did everything. I played the guitar, the bass, the play program, the drums, and went home that night, got home pretty late. Was pretty stoked or some shit. I don't remember. And then anyways, had to go back to the studio the next morning and meet the rest of the band there without the producer. Go and I start playing it. I'm like, check this out. I play on this new idea. Doug gravitated towards it right away and had these ideas. And he said, okay, you guys go into the room. And so we went into the live room. Doug stayed in the control room behind the window and guided us a little bit. The song had a different chorus at the time. I had there was fat to the song at one point, and it was a different chorus. Didn't go into what is now the chorus. It went into it was a new part. And I've tried for years to find the demo of it and I can't fucking find it. But because I'm curious what it sounded like. I don't remember. But Doug had this idea. He's just basically like, no, why don't you go from your verse, which was the verse, to what became the chorus, which was a little part in the song anyways, like it was the intro, you know.
Uh-huh.
He kind of guided us in that way. And he goes, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to sing my verse at this register, which was, you know, the I will dedicate, whatever, you know. And then when he goes to the he just knew in his head. He goes, and I'm just going to fucking belt it an octave higher in the chorus.
Yeah.
Which he does. But then we change a chord or two here or something. I forget exactly what, I don't have the guitar in my lap, but like, dude, it was quick. It was one of the quickest things that we have ever done as a band. And I feel like that's probably when the magic happens, you know?
I'll be a broken record here again. I can't tell you how many times I've said it on this show. We hear that. This song was a last minute addition, or this song was almost left on the cutting room floor. We wrote it in 5 minutes and here it becomes a signature song of the band. And that guitar riff is such a hook. And, you know, when I research these episodes, I always make sure to go and look at live renditions of the song, because a lot of times bands will change the keys and do different arrangements. And it's interesting to me, every video I saw, and I looked at a bunch of them, when you start that riff, the audience loses their mind. They just know,
yeah.
You know, and that's such a cool thing about having a guitar hook like that to start a tune.
Yeah. You know, I never planned it that way, but trust me, like what you said became a thought after the fact. Probably the most beautiful part about music is before all this shit starts to come in your head, you know, because after that, I started to write music with that in mind. I started to go, huh, it became a little bit more formulaic or calculated, you know? But to be honest with you, I'm sure that shit happened with a million other bands too, that were extremely successful. And, you know, I knew in my head, I wanted to start a song with drums. I wanted a drum beat to start a song, because I saw more than just the song on the record. I saw the live show, and I saw if that song becomes well known, you could extend that part. You could start a song and really just drag it out, you know? And Chris, our drummer, could be doing that drum beat. And people are going to know what's about to happen because they know the drum beat. Meanwhile, Doug is talking to the crowd, getting the crowd into it. It's just like, okay, the hair's going up on my arms, this anticipation. So I would go into songs like that when I'd be sitting at home, because I play everything. And when I'm writing music, I write with everything. I'd get on the drums and I'd be like, all right, what am I going to do here? Like, and I wrote a song called Just One, which is on the Reason record, starts with simple kick and snare, but flams, you know, like blah 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 kum blah kum blah 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 kum blah kum blah. To me, I'm like, okay, that's dope. So when we play that shit live, he could just fucking do that thing while I'm changing guitars, and I'll come in when I come in, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, music did become a lot more formulaic later, thinking about what you had just said, which is not what I thought writing the song.
Yeah, and it's so hard to go back to that innocence as a songwriter. I wish I could sometimes. I overthink and I cook things too long sometimes. And it's interesting when you didn't have all that in your head when you were young, and you kind of still didn't know what you were doing. You know, it's interesting that there's an intro clean guitar comes in at the top of this verse. Bass and drums are holding down a great groove. On the third line, there's some feedback. It's like the right speaker to the left, back to the right to the left. And I wish I could know that I take and all the choices that I make won't end up all for nothing. Was that natural created? Do you recall?
I do, yeah. I don't, and listening back to it and trying to get into my head now, as you know, from back then, I'm like, the fuck was I thinking, you know? Like, why
you weren't?
Why did I start doing that? Why did I and it was more about just production and overdubs, and I was very aware of what I wanted at that time. And the next two records after that as well, you know, the Reason record and Every Man for Himself, all those records, I knew what I wanted for the most part. I knew a lot of the, you know, the pedals I'd be using. I knew the pickups I'd be using. So yeah. And I do remember kind of standing there in the control room while the song was playing, and just kind of, I think I had my hand on the root note of the chord and was just kind of like leaning into the speakers so I can get the natural feedback. I don't think I went, I mean, every once in a while when we want to do stuff like that, I'd go into the live room so you could just really turn it up and get it straight out of the amp, you know? But I think for that one, I feel like I just was in there just kind of up against his little NS10s or whatever it was with my guitar.
Yeah.
Feeding back. Yeah. And there's another part too where I do like a harmonic, and it's weird because I don't know if I would do that today.
And for the listeners, NS10s are very common studio speakers that Dan was referring to there with the feedback. And I love that part. Again, another hook that is, it's a small hook, but it needs to be there in this song. I definitely wouldn't take that out. On the last lyric here, nothing, those big stereo guitars come back in to start chorus one.
Make me understand it. I've been crawling
party and chorus one at 42 seconds. That happens really quick. And I love the back and forth here with the drums of the chorus. I'm going to read through the lyrics here. Show me what it's for. Make me understand it. I've been crawling in the dark looking for the answer. Is there something more than what I've been handed? I've been crawling in the dark looking for an answer. And I wrote up here that this is a single chorus, but it feels like a double chorus because there's like a back half to it, you know? But it's not. It's just a single chorus. The drums continue the verse beat, but get heavier. There's like the open hi-hat comes in. There's some big fills here on the first two lines. The second two lines, the drums go double time. Then they come back on lines 4 and 5. Drums go halftime again. And then the last two lines, they go back fast. And I love, on the last two lines, that's where we hear the first vocal harmonies in the song. There's these cool low harmonies here. Do you recall that? Was that on the demo, or was that something that producer Jim Wirt had a hand in?
That was definitely something Jim had a hand in, because the demo actually, I don't think the demo had vocals on it. It didn't have vocals. The demo was just all the music. And then Doug would take that and listen to it and kind of right and whatever, and it just happened so quick that he never sang anything over it. But one thing about Doug, though, he was always and is still to this day extremely into harmonies and shit and all that ear candy stuff. And you know, one of his biggest inspirations ever was Mike Patton, you know, in the Faith No More stuff or Mr. Bump. His vocals are just insane, you know, and the harmonies were insane. And Jim was extremely helpful in guiding us and teaching us approaches. Yeah, Doug always had ideas and always had harmonies. I don't remember whose idea that was, but I do remember that song and working on things and having the conversation. Well, should the harmonies come in the first chorus, or should we wait until the second chorus? What are we going to do here? And actually, wait, maybe that might have been another song on the record. There's another song called Ready for You.
Well, there's a good chance it was this song, because there is more harmonies in the second chorus. I love how that builds, and I love how subtle this first harmony is in chorus one on those two lines. I've been crawling in the dark, looking for the answer. It's almost buried, you know? I had to like...
It's lower, right? It's like, he goes, yeah, I've been crawling in the dark, looking for the answer. Is there something more than what? Yeah, he just low, right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it almost sounds buried. I had listened to it a bunch, and I almost thought, like, wait, is the vocal just double track? No, that is a harmony there. It's really cool. Right out of chorus one, there's no reintro. We're right into verse two. Help me carry on. Show me it's okay to use my heart and not my eyes to navigate the darkness. I told you, it's like there's no fat to be trimmed here. Verse two, the first four lines rhythmically as a band are like verse one. And we'll get to the last two lines musically in a second. But the lyric is, help me carry on. Assure me it's okay to use my heart and not my eyes to navigate the darkness. Will the ending be ever coming suddenly? Will I ever get to see the ending to my story? You know, I'm not picking up on any religious undertones here lyrically. And I guess everybody can, music and lyrics are so subjective, but that's interesting that fans and people that listen to the band thought that.
Yeah. What I'm hearing, to be honest with you, is a young 20-year-old guy that has no fucking idea what's ahead of him. Understandably, because if you know Doug and you knew Doug back then, or you knew Doug in high school, you would have never pointed at that guy and been like, that's going to be the dude to be the lead singer of a band that does well. He just wasn't that guy. He was not a dick. He was just quiet, and he just kind of flew under the radars, and he was a sweet guy. You know, I don't think that he ever saw himself to be this guy. He's not Vernon Reed from Living Color on one of the shows that we did, like, after we played, like, we fucking killed it. The crowd was great. We were great on stage. Just, you know, when you walk up and you just feel so good about shit. Vernon Reed just is laughing at us. He's like, not at us, but he's like, dude, walks up to Doug right off the show. He goes, man, you're like the anti-lead singer. And it was just funny because that's why it's like so anti-lead.
Which is actually a compliment, but it could be construed as not.
No, dude, we were fucking stoked. Doug was like, thanks, Vernon. He's like, that's rad, because that's so true. It's So yeah, he's the anti-lead singer. He never thought he was going to be this guy that was whoever he was, whenever he was, and he doesn't. He's a dad. He's a fucking soccer coach, a baseball coach. That's his life, you know, unless we're touring and we're doing shit. So sometimes I think the two of us forget what we do. Sometimes we're like, oh, that's right. Yeah. but what I think was he was in his early 20s right there going like, fuck me, man. I signed a record deal. Like it wasn't me who did it, Dan. I wasn't the one that was like, come on, we're doing this. But it was me who was, come on, let's fucking do this. He wouldn't have done it on his own. You know, I was just the,
that's interesting.
I was just the idiot, just like blind and going, I don't give a fuck, man. We're going and like, you can sing, let's go. And he was supposed to go to school, dude. He was supposed to be a good student and on he was on the fucking honor roll or the dean's list and shit like that. And then we just started ditching school. So
you dragged your buddy to the dark side, Dan. Congratulations.
So he's searching. Yeah, I just think that he's just, what the hell am I dealing? Wow. You know,
that's cool. Well, I love the last two lines here. Will the ending be ever coming suddenly? Will I ever get to see the ending of my story? On that line, will the ending be ever coming suddenly? There's a droney guitar layer that comes in underneath this line. It's killer. It gives tension. You recall building that part in the studio?
I think it's a harmonic is what it is. I think I'm just on.
Okay.
I think I'd have to listen to that part right now. Are you talking about where the will the ending be ever coming suddenly? I'm doing like
yeah.
I'm doing a harmonic. I'm pretty sure at that spot. I'm just on like the low E string, just I think, or is that on the first verse? I can't think right the second. But that's possibly what it is. What the fuck's the last line, dude? Sorry, I just woke up, man, so I can't think for shit.
I need to stop waking guys in rock bands up before they need to get up.
But you're on the East Coast, right? Dude, it's like 3 hours ahead for you, so I get it.
But that's not your fault, Dan. Not your fault. Yeah, the last line is, will I ever get to see the ending to my story?
Right, and so it goes, the ending to my story, and I do this like, zoom, ga-ga-gum, I hit the E is what it's in. I accent that a little bit harder at that spot that I do than I do in the first verse. But there is something going on there, and it's possibly there's a harmonic of some sort that I'm doing just kind of through it.
I use the term droney there. It's just kind of this cool underlying layer.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, and on that last lyric, ending to my story, you can really hear the double unison vocal on this line, and it just lifts there before chorus two. Get to see the ending to my story. Again, the lyric on chorus two is, show me what it's for. Make me understand it. I've been crawling in the dark, looking for the answer. Is there something more than what I've been handed? I've been crawling in the dark, looking for an answer. Now, on line 3 and 4 here, 5, 6, and 7, there's harmonies throughout. Why just on those lines? Do you recall? Is that something, again, that Jim was working, or was Doug kind of thinking, okay, it's chorus two, we're building here, I want to stick some more harmonies because they're really well placed?
But that was probably Jim. I mean, I got to give him credit because he's basically was our first school teacher, you know, as a band. Had that been a Howard album, I as much as, you know, Howard is a vocal producer, I would have said that was Doug, because at that point, Doug went in. I mean, I could play you demos, you know, one day and you'll hear, and the demos were done by just Doug and I, and you'll hear his harmonies, and both of our production going into it was already there. But before that, yeah, when we were teens, when we were kids, we got picked up by Jim Wirt because he saw potential in us as a band. We were horseshit at that time. I mean, not really. We were okay. We had some songs on that Basketball Shorts record that were cool, and then some songs that we cringe at if we hear them. But he was just kind of guiding us and developing us. We didn't really know much about what was going on. He was trimming the fat of us in developing us. And so at that time, yeah, he was very... I had these ideas for vocals, and all that shit was recorded to tape. Also, it wasn't Pro Tools. We did use Pro Tools on that first record a little bit, but it was brand new, and it was recorded to tape, dumped into Pro Tools, dumped back to tape, and then mixed on tape.
Do you recall if there was any, vocal tuning in Pro Tools at that point?
There was none. That record has,
there was not.
And that trips me out, dude. I go, after that record, everything was tuned. of course. Towered.
Yeah.
But no, there was no fucking tuning. There was, I don't know. I guess they must have had that, right? It was 2000. It was the year 2000.
Oh yeah, yeah. We were using Pro Tools to tune stuff a couple years prior to that, but we were also the guinea pigs through Howard Benson. We were one of the first Pro Tools record. I think it was like us and Alanis Morissette, and Howard was we were his guinea pigs. But that's crazy that this was the tape for the most part. But at the end of this chorus, it's Doug by himself looking for the answer. Does he say like, answer here, or is it answerer? Like he kind of holds on. I don't know. On all the lyrics I find online, it doesn't say answer here, but it's like looking for the answer.
He's just saying looking for the answer. That's all he's saying. He's not saying looking for the answer here. It's simply just looking for the answer. He's just pushing that syllable at the end right there. It's still this looking for the answer.
Gotcha.
And then he pushes a little harder. So it's not, yeah.
Well, we go in here to what I'm calling the post-chorus jam. I'm not gonna call this the bridge. The bridge comes in a moment. Love this part. It goes right into it again. There's no like interlude part. It just goes right into this. And I call this the helmet part. Were you ever into Helmet?
Yeah, I was. I do like Helmet, but I don't remember thinking of Helmet at that time. I don't remember, honestly. It's funny because I have memories of living at home, right? I'm living at my mom's house at this time and I'm in my bedroom and we had a computer and it was, fuck, it had to have been early 2000 because the record came out. And it was right at the beginning of us having a computer and like, it was probably 99 and AOL and all that shit. And I just remember sitting up against the computer desk with my feet up on it, kind of pushing back with my guitar. And I wasn't recording into the computer at that time because I couldn't do that at that time. I was just playing guitar, yeah, sitting there. And that's where I came up with the bridge. The ba-dunk-gunna-gunna-gunna-gunna. I came up with that there. And I just don't know what I was listening to at that time. I don't know. I mean, Helmet, Doug loved Helmet.
Well, this part is such a departure. It's so cool because nothing else in the song sounds like this. These staccato stereo guitar rhythms, the dun-dun, dun-dun. It's just, it's really cool. And then there's a lyric here. So when and how will I know? And there's a delay on no, 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 no. That goes for two measures. And on the third and fourth measure, this background guitar is layered underneath, playing these like cool palm muted overtones and harmonics. I love that part at the end of the bridge. Do you recall how that came about? And again, was that in the demo or something that you were creating in the studio with Jim?
That was created in the studio with Jim. But real fast, I think that the bridge, like how you're saying, how it goes into that staccato-ish, the gagong, gagong,
mm-hmm,
that part is just E F sharp or some shit like that, gagong. And then I go into a D, you know, for the how much for it, and there's this payoff.
Yes.
Tool is not going to ever want to hear that Hoobastank was influenced by Tool because they probably can't fucking stand us, but I don't give a shit. So that actually, so Tool is, I don't want to say Tool's responsible, but like, you know, Tool has had this shit in their songs where there was these bridges that would have a piece that it'd go into a bridge or post-chorus or whatever it was. And then this anthemic big fucking bridge where that was the model. I'm not saying we sound like Tool or we want to sound like Tool or anything Tool. But yeah, that was also probably in our wheelhouse at the time. Like, we're doing this thing. And then when it hits that D, it's like a Tool bridge where it hits that chord and now he's fucking singing his melody and the tension's gone. Yeah, dude. So if you're hating on us, just hate on Tool first. It's their fault.
Maynard, it's your fault.
What you're talking about, the end of the bridge right there, I'm playing like the how much further do I have to go, whatever, the playing these chords. And then there's like on top of it or underneath it, it's octaves. And I'm literally just going, you know, a harmony of the doing little things like that, you know, and then it works its way up the neck to the in front of me, you know? Yeah. So it was a conscious thing that I did in the studio. I didn't do that in the demo that I recall. Well, as you're working with a producer, as you know, or an engineer, and they have ideas, they're like, it needs something here. It needs ear candy here. And it was our first time making a real record. So we were just being guided, or I would have ideas to try things. So it was a bit of the producer, Jim Wirt, saying, man, it needs this here, and or me just having an idea already, you know?
That's awesome. Well, I'm calling that the post-chorus. Then we get into the bridge, and the lyric is, how much further do I have to go? And there's a backing vocal response, have to go. How much longer until I finally know? And again, finally know, and there's a killer high holdout note.
Finally know.
Yeah, it goes up there. It's awesome, because I'm looking, and I just can't see what's in front of me. And there's a harmony on just can't see what's in front of me. I love that part. And then he really reaches for in front of me. And you know chorus three is going to happen. No fat, no reintro part. Goes right into chorus three. And it breaks down here to just that intro clean guitar again with drums.
Show me what it's for. Make me understand it.
Dun, 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 dun. The four hits from the top beginning of the song happen again. And I wrote here in my notes that drums can be a hook in many instances. And that to me, those four tom hits right there are a hook harking back to the beginning of the song. And I know you see those. I've watched the live videos. Those fists go in the air when those toms happen. It's so cool.
Or it's like somebody driving their car. It's like, boom, 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 boom. You know, it's those little air drums. Like, yeah. No, you're right.
Yeah, we've all done it to In the Air Tonight by Phil Collins and Jack and Diane by Mellencamp. Drums can be a hook. But yeah, it breaks down here. Show me what it's for. Make me understand it. And on that second line, a guitar swell happens before the next line. The band is back in. I've been crawling in the dark, looking for the answer. Is there something more than what I've been handed? I've been crawling in the dark, looking for the answer. And there's harmonies on the third line of the chorus and on all the lines after that till the end of the song. Looking for the answer. A lot of stuff going on here. There's no double chorus in the song. Again, they're all single choruses. Kind of feels like a double because it's a long chorus. There's no double. Did Jim Wirt or the band ever discuss, hey, we should probably double this chorus at the end or not?
Yeah, I'm sure that came up at some point. I don't remember exactly, but it's very possible, you know, because you said that the song is under 3 minutes. But we also knew at that point, too, like, if we're going to add anything to this, it's going to be well over 3 minutes. And we don't want to do that. And it's just a trip, you know. Honestly, like, I haven't dissected the song this way, and having you dissected this way, it's just like, I'm like listening to you and I'm thinking back to it and going, fuck, man. Like, there's certain things that just happen.
I'll be honest with you. I'm surprised that artists, yourself included, remember as much as they do. And I'm like that. I can take, once I really get my mindset and I can get back, and I'm sure you can too. You can smell the studio and you can, you know, see the producer. You can envision him with his feet up on the soundboard and you go right back to that time. And I'm really amazed at what people can recall. You know, it's been 20 plus years since you recorded this record.
Yeah. A lot of these things that you pull out and say, and you're quoting or whatever it is, or these little things that I'm like, fuck, man. Like, I guess I'm at a point right now where I don't know, I feel a little bit more humble, or I feel proud of what we did on that song and other songs as well. But fuck. Yeah. Cause I was young, dude. I was 22 or 23 years old at that time. And I'm like, how the fuck did we do that? Like, how did we do that at that age?
You should be proud. And I'll tell you, since, you know, the last 20 years, you know, when everything went digital with Pro Tools and just the way mastering and everything is, I'm getting some records on here, this one included, that just don't, it only sounds dated to me because I know how old it is. It doesn't sound dated from production wise. This thing is just slamming.
Yeah.
You know, I cranked it up in my car the other day. I always do it. I always give the car test to this day. I was driving to pick up my kids from school and I cranked it in the car and I'm like, damn, it just say it 20 over 20 years old. It's your first record. You should be proud. It sounds awesome, Dan.
Well, what's funny is, like, as I listen, because we've had to get back into this record to play it because of the 20-year anniversary. And so I was with the guys and I'm like, dude, I've been listening to the record, rehearsing to it and stuff. And it's insane. The mix, right? And you know, mixes of records, and it's like the loudest fucking thing on the mix of that record goes guitar, vocals, drums, bass. The guitars are the loudest thing by far. And I'm listening to it today going like, fuck, that's loud, dude. That's just so obnoxiously loud. I dig it, but where's the bass? The vocals are underneath. They're not like Howard Records changed. Once we started working with Howard, things started changing. And
he's a vocal guy. Right, that's what he's all about.
But also too, dude, you just said something about Pro Tools and digital and recording that way. And I've been talking to somebody about, I think that as amazing as it is that we have both and we're able to see the WAV files, I think that the minute that it went to this, like, oh, now I'm just looking at a fucking WAV file and not just using just this.
Yeah, using just your ears.
It's like a dog. A dog is intuitive and has heightened senses because they can only use certain senses. Therefore, their ears and their sight and whatever it is they're intuitive. And they rely on that a lot more. The minute that this fucking shit came out that we could see that, like, oh my God, the kick is like behind the grid or whatever. And then you get Paul DeCarli and they're fucking putting everything to his meter. Everything sounds the same after a while, dude. Like, I get it. I don't, cause when you say dated, things sound dated. When I listen to our Reason record, it sounds dated. It sounds fucking dated. I love that particular song and I love the songs, but that it just was different, dude. The minute that you can start seeing that, oh, look, Plotnikov's looking at me. Look, you're behind right here. I'm like, yeah, well, that shit didn't exist 20 years ago, and you had to fucking use this. Let's go back to this, dude. I'm upstairs working on you, dude. You're in front of a computer right there. You're probably recording shit all day long on Logic or Pro Tools, seeing the exact same thing. You know?
Oh, I just wanted to say for the listeners, you know what Dan is referring to, and I do this all the time. I'll do a harmony, and I'll look on that track, and I'll see that the harmony, the wavelength, the waveform is not as long as the melody, and I go, ah. But then I listen and I close my eyes. I listen with my ears and I go, but it sounds great. Doesn't need to be perfect. And that's a hard line. That's hard to get away from. But I completely understand that. You know, the last 10 seconds of the song goes back to the heavy intro groove for two measures. And then the song just ends abruptly. And there's your 2 minutes and 55 seconds, which, again, perfect length for a pop rock tune. And this song's great, man.
I appreciate it, dude. Thank you very much. It's old as dirt now. So
it is. But again, congratulations on all your success. Celebrating 20-year anniversary of the self-titled record. And before we go here, please let the listeners know what's going on with you and Hoobastank coming up.
Well, you know, it's funny because I should just, at this moment, we don't have shit coming up. So what I like to do at this moment is just tell people we're touring with other bands that we're really not touring with. So then maybe those bands, yeah, we're going out with like Metallica and we're just hanging right now at home. We have some shows here and there. We're just trying, dude, we just want to get back out, you know. 2021, the summer, was our first time back out touring in a while. And it was such a great experience and a great time that our plan is to just do shows and hopefully figure out some type of a package thing with some other bands and get back out there. And, you know, if you guys want to tour, dude, we are so open to touring with whoever. Seriously, dude, I actually like that too. I like the thing that we did on the Everclear Weedus Living Color thing. To me, when we're all out there, I go, it makes sense. We all fucking make sense. It makes sense. But to some people, they're like, that doesn't make sense. And I'm like, good. I like that. I like that it's somewhat different. That band sounds like this. That band sounds like this. That band sounds like this. But when we all get out there, we're going to fucking slap you in the face. Like, we just want to walk out there and fucking kill it and see people smile, have a good time and leave. So that's what our goal is for 2022, is to play more shows, get in people's faces and see what happens.
Right on, man. Well, thank you so much for sitting in with us today.
Yeah, dude. Thanks for having me.
Don't go in a different direction now. There's a whole lot more Krista Makes a Podcast after a few words from our sponsors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, if you need a unique, thoughtful, and inexpensive gift for a friend or loved one, check out iloveenamelpins.com. Make someone's day by giving them a little present to show you care. Over 80 different pins are available, everything from cats and dogs to your favorite celebrities. And to top it off, you can use the discount code ChrisDeMakes at checkout to save 30% on your order. iloveenamelpins.com. Give them something to wear that shows that you care.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Chris to Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is email your song via MP3 only and bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is the Central Pennsylvania band Owned by Assholes. This is old school punk rock, snotty, brash, loud, and fast. Their most recent EP is called American Suicide. And here's a snippet of their song, Heaven's Chimney.
Say it to you, licked in your boots. Colloquium of ignorance, except your view as absolute. A fraud group picks away, watch your numbers raise.
The Wrap with Chris and Chris.
All right, man, so you got a California guy up early out of bed for this episode. I can tell, and then you're asking him questions about a song from decades ago.
Yeah, what a way to wake up. Yeah, don't mind me. I've been awake for 6 hours here on the East Coast.
Right, but I think it was a great episode. Speaking of being sleepy, I think you kind of caught him off guard when you said, there's really no fat on this song. And he's like, what do you mean? But I knew what you meant. You meant that this is a perfectly concise, no extraneous parts. It is to the point, and it is the formula for a hit rock song.
Yeah, I think a lot of times you could listen to even hit songs that are massively popular, and go, yeah, you know, it would have been the same song, probably would have done just as well without that part. In this particular track, man, there's no fat. It's just every piece here, I think, needs to be there.
Yeah, you couldn't really cut anything from this song.
Mm-mm, no.
It would sound like a part of a song rather than a whole song if you did that. But that's great. I thought the episode was great. I thought Dan was really funny. I thought it was crazy. I had never listened to Hoobastank's first album before. And that is a drastic change in sound. But like you said, they did have a cool sound. There were horns involved. They had more of like a funky feel to them. They had some ska parts. It felt to me, just as in my experience, the same sort of way. They had a lot of influences, but didn't know what to focus on.
Yeah, and it's interesting where their sound ended up. It couldn't be more removed from what that first album was. And again, as far as the demo first album goes, it sounds great. I agree. It didn't really have a one direction with it, as you just mentioned, but it sounded really good. Where they ended up on the next record was just light years away, though. It was really surprising.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you guys did Crawling in the Dark as your pick, because this is my favorite song by Hoobastank. I especially love the chorus and how it goes back and forth rhythmically, but between the halftime and the picked up. It's great. It's awesome. Such a good, catchy, powerful chorus.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's other songs that do that. I can't think of one off the top of my head, but I think that's what makes that chorus work. It's really interesting. You would think that, you'd want to keep a chorus all halftime or, you know, all upbeat. And going back and forth is, I think, what adds the charm to the song.
I thought it was funny, and I never would have thought of this, but Dan talked about how people thought there was some sort of religious aspect to the lyrics of this song. And then I was like, why would people necessarily think that? And I figured it out. It's because the word sacrifice is used in the verse. And hey, religious people, you don't have full claim to the word sacrifice. Non-religious people can use the word sacrifice too, you know?
Yeah,
that's what I figured out anyway.
I was surprised to hear that as well. I don't really pick up any religious overtones or anything with this track.
I also thought it was really cool, and I never thought of this before you said it, Chris, but the second you said it, I'm like, oh my God, it does. That the bridge kind of reminded you of Helmet. And Helmet has a song called Unsung, which I'm going to play a clip of. Helmet was always cool rhythmically, but okay, so they had these like interesting rhythms with the mainline melodies that kind of soared over rhythms that could be kind of jarring. I thought that was always the appeal of Helmet.
Yeah, and when I asked Dan about it, you know, he seemed like he really hadn't thought about that, but he did agree that they were an influence at some point, but that's immediately what I heard when I heard that part.
I mean, it's just like when you did the Dee Snider episode, man. You have these things in your head and you don't know what they are or where they come from, but they can manifest themselves, and it could be years or decades later where someone goes to you, just like on Dee's episode, like, well, you know that We're Not Going to Take It is Come All You Faithful, right? And you're like, what? And I'm sure you and I would both have those things too, where someone will pick out something in a song and be like, oh, you know that's this, right? And you're going to be like, oh my God. I'm sure that would happen to every songwriter ever. But it's funny that you picked out the Helmet thing.
Yeah, no. And you know, sometimes you got to be careful when you say this part sounds like that. It's like, wait, we didn't try to rip them off.
Right.
That's not what I mean when I say something like that. It's just, you know, we all have influences and they creep into the music.
Yeah, for sure. That's all I meant too. I didn't mean it was a complete ripoff or anything.
No,
not at
all.
It's just an inspiration for a part, which is really cool. You guys had a lot of mutual connections and stuff, Howard Benson being one of them.
Yes.
Then you guys broed out on Bang Tango, which Bang Tango, back in the day when Punchline did a tour with Les and Jake, Bang Tango was on some of those dates. Tommy Two-Tone was on some of those dates. I had no idea who Bang Tango was at all, but it was funny to hear you guys geek out on him.
Not too many people did. And you know, and to your point earlier, you know, Crawling in the Dark, you know, you and I had talked about doing The Reason, which is arguably their biggest song, Hoobastank.
It definitely is.
Massive hit, but we both felt there was just so much more to Crawling in the Dark. The Reason's a great song, but this was just a little bit more there to talk about. Case in point, how I said there's just no fat here. I think this is the perfect little modern rock pop track, rock track.
Yeah, and there were a couple things that are running themes on our show. One of them being that Crawling in the Dark was a song that happened really late in the recording process, like one day before they were going to go to the studio. But I think that that's the time when your mind is on like full creative mode. And that's when things might come out of you. You don't have all the distractions. You're focused on the studio. And sometimes those last minute ideas end up being hits. Case in point, Crawling in the Dark.
Yeah, and how many times have you heard that on this show where it's the 11th hour? We heard it with Matt Skiba with the radio. You know, just went out back to have a smoke break and had his acoustic guitar and the song happens. It's kind of like, I think that also happened maybe with Chad, Newfound Glory, where it's the 11th hour. You already got an album in the can. You already have the songs, but there's no pressure and this wonderful, amazing song comes out.
Yeah, it's awesome. And it's also awesome. In Crawling in the Dark is an example of a song where the riff starts the song off. And when you're playing it live, the second you start playing that riff, people are like, yeah, you know, it's like something to think about having that. I know Les and Jake has those songs that start out with guitar and people instantly know what it is.
Yeah, that's so important. And I think, again, I always research live performances of the songs we do here on the show because I love seeing those kinds of things. And every video I watch of Crawling in the Dark online, when Dan starts that opening riff, the place just they lose their minds. They go crazy.
Yeah, and one more thing in this episode that I wanted to talk about is Dan had referenced how they were, and you agreed with him about your own band, that you were, what do you call, bands in jeans and t-shirts, meaning you're not too worried about your style or anything. But Chris, I got a question for you. If you could go back to the start and be either A, really like stylish band in like skinny ties and stuff, or B, a band in all out makeup like Guar or something, would you want to do that?
If I moved up 5 tax brackets, Chris, I'd probably dress in anything.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Not that you're any stranger to dressing up like anything,
yeah.
But
I never thought about that. Good question. That's great.
And I got another good question for you, Chris.
What do you got there, Chris?
Say I wanted a custom song from you. How would I go about that?
Man, the king of the segues is back, ladies and gentlemen. I love it. yes, you can get a custom song from me, for a friend, for a loved one, for yourself, whoever you'd like. Email me, chrisdemakes@gmail.com for info. I'd love to write a song for you. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, no problem. I'll always set you up and you can spike it down. It's like volleyball, except me talking to you about your custom songs. Anyway, also, I would really implore anyone who loves the show to go leave us a 5-star rating and a review wherever you listen to us, whether that's on Apple Podcasts. You can even write a written review on there. Spotify added a star system. You can give us 5 stars on there. It helps other people find the show and helps our show continue.
Absolutely. We appreciate all the support. And can you believe this month is over? The first month of 2022 is already gone. This is crazy.
Boom, just like that.
I know. If you haven't already, please join our supporting cast group. That's our VIP program where you get bonus episodes of the after party. And man, there's all kinds of cool things happening now, Chris. We got The Journey. We got Defeat to Makes, the music trivia game show. It's like you're keeping me busy.
Yeah, man, I'm keeping you busy. And we're hopefully keeping you, the listener, both entertained and educated, but also comforted. And I know as well as anybody, as a avid podcast listener, that a good podcast can be a very comforting and relaxing experience. It's something you can depend on every week to brighten your day a little bit, especially since we always release these new episodes on Monday mornings, which might not be your favorite time of the week. So yeah, we appreciate you listening at all, but if you want to go the extra mile and get a lot more podcasts as well, check out ChrisDeMakes.com.
Absolutely. And I think that's about it. Thanks to everybody for listening. And I want to thank this week's guest, Dan Estrin from Hoobastank, for sitting in with us. And we'll see you next week.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real, honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.